Welcome to The Reseller Entrepreneur, the podcast for reseller hobbyists eager to turn reselling into a successful business. Learn from Mike and other reseller entrepreneurs as they share their experiences and tips on running an online business. Here's your host, Old Fashioned Mike.
Hello, hello, hello. How you doing? Hope business is good. So today is going to be an interesting episode because I just came up with it last night. Of course, that's how all my episodes go. I usually come in with something at last minute because I have an inspiration. So nothing new. I have a new inspiration. I'm calling this episode Hiccups. And what it's about is that we find when we change our business model that sometimes unanticipated things start to happen. And that's happened with me. I've never been selling more than I've ever sold in my life as far as numbers go. I used to average, I think when I first started the year, I was averaging about 10 a day. And now I'm well above 15 to 20 and sometimes even more than that. So it's just pretty awesome in some respects. But here is the hiccup. What I did not anticipate is my average selling price going down. Well, and I've said this before, actually, average selling price being high is not necessarily a problem if you have your costs under control and your acquisition costs are low. So I'm going to give you an example. When I was selling clothing, when I would sell a shirt, and just like a button-down casual shirt, I would sell usually around anywhere from between $22, $23 all the way up to about $30. And I would pay about $5 for that, and then it would cost me $5 to ship. And I'm just rounding these up. And so, and then there's fees and promotion fees as well. And if I offered any discounts as well. So what would happen is that my average gross profit would be about $17 and my net profit would be about probably about $9, be nine to 10. I can get you exact numbers, but that's just my memory. So, what happens when your average selling price drops though from $24 to like $19? What does that happen? What happens to you when that happens? Well, my gross profit dropped to about $14 from $17, and my net profit, which was between 9 and 10, is now about 7. So I need to sell a lot more to make the same amount of money. It's been kind of hidden from me for several months because I was still selling a lot of clothing from my old inventory. And this month, specifically this month, it's weird. All of a sudden, my postcards are taking off, but my clothing has really just kind of gone into the tank. And so my average net profit is low. So what's happening here? Well, I'm looking at my sales and normally I'd sell a card at $15, minimum $15, and then, add in the shipping and add in, things like, promoted listings and fees and stuff like that. It starts to whittle down. So what I've noticed, what I've been doing is I've been getting a lot of sales on lower cost items this month. Now my acquisition cost is still making me a ton of money compared to what I've put out. So, you'd say, okay, what other costs are happening in my sales this month? Well, I've added things. Like I've added an employee to help me list, and I've added another employee to help me to do my inventory because I have to reduce my footprint of my warehouse before I move to Florida. And so, there's some other costs that are going in that are basically eating into my net profit. So I'm calling this a hiccup, and it is a hiccup, but it really is not bad news here. If I were to take away, so my gross profit is what I should be looking at. My gross profit is lower. There's no doubt about it. And the way I calculate gross profit is essentially I take the shipping costs and the fees out and the promoted listings costs as well. All the eBay related fees, right? I take those out, and that determines my gross profit. And then my net profit is taking out all the other things that I pay for, my warehouse, any kind of cellular phone, which I do bill to the company because I do use it to do things on my phone for the business. It's my electricity. It's that kind of stuff, right? So what I've started to do is really to start to look at those and see what's temporary and what's permanent. Obviously, I also need to look at my pricing because I think that I am maybe pricing my items too low, which is great for my sales, but it turns out that the sales are the amount of money I'm making is going down. So it's not a good news thing. Now, it's been masked because of a lot of the sales for my clothing items, which is starting to diminish because I'm not listing any new clothes at all. I'm only relisting stuff that maybe have come back. But this needs to be analyzed. What do I need to do to kind of get my numbers back up? Now, my business process is pretty set. So when I buy new inventory, I buy it in bulk, and then I go through it, and any stuff that I don't want to keep because I don't deal with it or whatever, right? I basically blot it up and sell it as lots. Well, I haven't listed any lots until I just did yesterday, just because I saw this happening. So I usually sell two or three lots a month, and that actually and big lots, and so those start to impact the average sales price. So I am now, hopefully, if those sell, and they will sell, that'll bring that back up. So last month was my highest dollar amount ever sold, other than last December when I sold some old equipment, PCs that I owned that, were just getting rid of inventory, but I don't count those because those were personal inventory that I just need to get rid of. So I don't count those in my numbers. But other than that, this last month was my best financial month ever. So I've noticed, though, I'm about $20 a day less than last month. So not great news. But that being said, what adjustments do I need to make? So I'm starting to look at that now. I've done a few lots. I've started to look at items that I have that is, kind of holding to list, because I have a backlog that, I'm going through and seeing what some higher price items are. And I'm going to start to list those probably, this upcoming week, and hopefully some of those will sell, and that'll start to kind of impact, my average sales price will then gross profit and then net profit. So also I've spent about a quarter on new goods to sell, new inventory than I did last month. So there are some definite areas, some levers that I could pull that will impact this. And I just haven't, because mind you, it's only the eighth day. This is today's Saturday, and I know I'm releasing on Thursday. So but this is the only eighth day of the month. So there is time to react, but the point is I'm trying to impart here is to use, need to start looking at whether that you have any hiccups in your business and what are those things that are causing those hiccups, and what can you do? What levers can you pull to start fighting against, dropping numbers? So not all bad news, but also some not great news in my opinion. So also, I got to look at the other platforms. The other platforms are starting to slow down. So last month, I had a ton of sales on Poshmark. No Mercari. I've pulled out of Mercari completely, but a lot on Poshmark, a lot on Grailed, and a lot of Hip Postcard. So, and I haven't had much there this month. So, I'm averaging, 15 or more a day on eBay, but the platforms, which would normally be 3 to 5 a day each, are no longer in that category. Now, the reason for this, of course, is that I'm reducing my inventory in those platforms, not Hip Postcard, that's different, but I'm reducing my inventory in Poshmark and Grailed because I'm selling, but I'm not replenishing. So, and those platforms specifically really, really look at activity. Now, different types of activity. Grailed largely just new listings, and Poshmark is not only new listings, but also doing all the social shares and stuff like that. I've stopped doing all of that And I anticipate by the August, September timeframe when I leave that I will not be selling on these other platforms at all. So it's expected, but it is having an impact. So the only way to get out of this is to list more. You know, that is the best way to actually, if you have any slow periods in your business, the best way is to just list more. And you want to make sure you're listing the right things. So I am listing the right things. I'm definitely getting sales. I'm ratcheting up, and I'm those numbers for eBay, I'm just kind of pulling them out of my, it's an estimate. I know that they're at least that. They may be more, but they're not in the hundreds. And I want to get to selling probably 80 to 90 a day. And that's going to take a lot of inventory. Also, when I'm in Florida, my costs will be lower because, you know, I have to pay somebody $15 an hour here, in Massachusetts, in order to, you know, to compete, right? And it's very difficult to find good employees right now because a lot of them are sitting out because of, you know, the whole COVID thing. And, you know, this is not a political discussion, but there is some thing to be said that if somebody can make on unemployment, at least $15 an hour, why would they go out and work for $15 an hour when they get it for free? So I get that. And, like I said, not a political discussion, but it is a reality. I know a lot of restaurant owners that are having the same kind of problem finding staff, for this reason. Right. So that's not going to happen in Florida because the federal government, by the time I'm there, the federal government assistance will be gone. And people will be forced to go back to work that would normally kind of be on the edges. So if you're a professional and you're making $100,000 a year, that doesn't really apply to you. But we're not talking about that when we're employing people within our business. We're talking the, let's call it $10 to $15 an hour employee. Here in Massachusetts, must be $15. I could probably get away with, let's say, $10 to $12 in Florida. Now, there are some people that say, well, then you got to, you know, you're just doing it under the table, so it's no big deal. No, don't do that because it's going to cause you problems in just about every jurisdiction. So, you know, if you direct their efforts, then they are employees, whether you like it or not. So I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I've been in business for a long time in my life that I know this to be a fact. So, you know, if you want to, you should double check it to see if in your state it's different. But in any state I've ever been in, even in Texas, that if you direct the behaviors or the work product of others, then they are employees, that they're not contractors. So, but the cost of these people will be lower in Florida. Plus also I won't have a warehouse and I won't have the electricity. I'll have personal electricity for my home, but I won't have the electricity bill. I won't have the internet bill will be shared between home and work. Right now I have to pay for both. So those levers, I can't pull them today, but they will be pulled sometime in the September timeframe. So like I said, you need to start looking through your business and see where you can cut, where you can add. And when I say where you can add is if you add an employee and you want them to be as productive as you, maybe not right away, but you want them to be as productive as you in doing whatever their task is going to be, whether it's shipping or listing, whatever. So the point is list, and that will pull you out, right? So I can also say that I probably need to be a little bit tighter on accepting offers. So I accept just about every offer because I'm either trying to get rid of it before I move, or I'm just trying to to churn income. So I mean, obviously, the more clothing I get rid of, the less I have to move, and the less I have to move, the less it's going to cost me to move. And in the postcards, they're so low in the acquisition costs that I'm actually being pretty lenient, taking things sometimes a third of what I've originally asked. And I'm not asking top dollar for a lot of these things. So I need to be a little bit tighter on that. I guess that's what I'm saying. So that's on me. And, I should be less concerned about shipping, you know, 15 to 20 a day for eBay and maybe getting down to maybe the 10 to 15, but having higher price. So I'm kind of going through that right now. Now I am priced at market or maybe slightly below market because I want to have activity. I know that there are a lot of people out there to say price a lot higher and then basically run sales all the time. And I do that, but I run lower sales. So I don't run 30% sales. I run 5% sales. So I need to start really looking at that to see whether or not I need to adopt their pricing strategy. Now, what I've been doing is I check to see other prices for the items that I'm selling, and I try to price on the higher side, but not astronomical. So, but people still come to me. So I know that, and I use really good keywords. So remember, the key for searching, and we talked about this last week, is to make sure you use those 80 characters to get those keywords in. I think I'm definitely doing that because I see the activity in my account as far as the number of sales, but I need to be tighter on accepting offers. That's really kind of it. So I think if I do those things, I'll see an impact. So just to kind of give you a summary of that, is to be tighter on my items as far as pricing goes, pull the levers for costs associated with selling. So I need to do that. I need to potentially price higher and see how that impacts my sales. And of course, the most important thing is to list more. So I'm listing about 150 a day right now. I need to push it to 200. Now I have pushed it to 200 before, and it's a very, very difficult day. But now that I have a person that's helping me, and they do probably about 30 to 50 a day, 'cause they're only working a couple hours a day, I could easily make the 200 if I push. So, that's it. If you have more opportunities to sell, then you'll have more sales, and then, your ability to be a little bit pickier on the bids that you accept will be easier. Okay, let me talk about a few other things that I think that I've learned by having an employee. So one of the things I'm definitely going to do, and I'm starting this right now, is to build an employee handbook. And that's important because I'm finding that that people don't do the same thing, the things that you do, the same way. That may not be a problem if they're really, really good at it. But the point is that you don't want to give them the opportunity, or I would say not opportunity, but the requirement that they have to discover the best way to do it. You should be documenting the best way to do something. And then when they're doing it well, they can come back and say, listen, if we make these tweaks, I could do this faster or better or whatever. So this starts with an employee handbook, and that basically goes through every single step in the listing process. Now, I'm doing my own shipping right now for the most part. And so you need to do the same thing for shipping, though. So anything you give to somebody else, matter of fact, even if you don't give it to somebody else, you should actually document every single step of the process and make it in a way that will be understood by anybody who picks up that manual without having you in the room. This will allow you to hire somebody for less. So the reason why McDonald's, for instance, is able to hire people at minimum wage and run like the way they do is because they have very, very well documented processes and procedures for just about everything. Everything. And so you can then hire somebody who just needs to be able to follow instructions. You don't want people winging it, right? So
stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
They can hire people now $15 an hour, but $10 an hour to flip burgers because the way they flip burgers is consistent throughout the globe. And so all you need to do is hand this person a handbook, have them practice what it says, and then they could just go on and do it. And you need something exactly like that in your business for every single aspect of your business, right? Because you don't want to be sitting there having to to show somebody something and then they leave and then you have to show somebody something again, you know, doing the same thing. And you got to make sure that you're consistent, right? So, you know, if you have it all documented, it's very simple that you hand it to them, you train them a few times, but you do it, you know, you go through the checklist mentality with them and then they can just do it. And same thing with shipping. And by the way, I should say shipping is probably one of the most important things in your business. And the reason why I say that is because it's one of the physical touch points with your business, with your customer. And so you need to make sure that when things go out, it goes out in a way that the customer will be happy with it. Number two is it is one of the areas where eBay really, really costs you a lot of money. I mean, you know, they get good rates and stuff. I'm not saying that, but you know, the mentality of an eBay buyer is very different than a Poshmark buyer, for instance, where Poshmark, you know, it's not free shipping. You might offer discounts in shipping, but you know, the point is my gross profit margin on Poshmark has always been better than eBay because the shipping is charged for to the customer, not to you. So anyway, you want to make sure that you're not bleeding money out of your business through the shipping department. And how do you get around that? You make sure the way you ship is well documented so that really anybody can do it. So, and it's always experimenting too. And when I say experimenting, that's not probably the right word, but I just found out that in the new shipping for postcards and coins and things like that, anything under $20 goes for less than a dollar for shipping. And this is huge, right? And so, but what I found also is that if it's 3 ounces, it's 91 cents to send something out. It's 71 cents if it's 2 ounces, and it's 51 cents if it's 1 ounce. So, and then there's strict also, I should say, there's strict measurements too. So as long as you meet those measurements and you're in those weight classes, you could save anywhere from, you know, you could save the $3 or so that you would normally sell first class. You could send it if it's a $20 or less card. Now that's interesting. Now think about that. If I sell something at $21, I have to pay for first class shipping at $3 and let's say $3 and I charge $3.95. So that means I went from making potentially $3 from shipping, you know, under the new program to now making, you know, 70, well, let's call it 95 cents at the best. So you got to think about that, right? So that needs to be all worked into your employee handbook. And as it changes, you need to update that employee handbook, and then you need to retrain people on it. But if you get the shipping done really, really well with people other than yourself, then what happens is that allows you to leave and go on vacation and do all the things that we supposedly are doing this for in the first place. I mean, you don't want to be in a situation where you just traded your, you know, let's call it $50,000 a year job to now getting a $50,000 a year eBay job and none of the benefits other than you're not being told to what to do by your boss. There's no benefits of being self-employed because you're doing all the work, right? So you definitely want to get to the point where you're hiring somebody, whether that person is an outsourced person or whether or not it's a service or whether or not somebody's sitting right next to you in your home or office to do some of the work for you. But a shipping person will create that freedom. That's one of the things that's really nice about the Amazon FBA program is that you could just buy stuff and then you ship it off to Amazon and they take care of all the logistics. Logistics equals freedom, right? So you need to be able to do that. Now, how do you do that with eBay? It's, well, they do have some services that will actually do shipping for you on eBay. So you ship your product just like you would FBA and then they would ship it out. Now, the upside is you get the freedom. The downside is, of course, is that you're giving up pretty hefty profits for monthly rent because your stuff doesn't move as fast as it does on eBay, on Amazon. So get around that, hiring a shipping person and making sure that that shipping person is not bleeding profits out the door by using the wrong shipping methods for your items. Number two, you want to make sure that you get an employee that does listing for you too. Now, maybe listing with you. In other words, you're doing some and they're doing some. You don't want to just, you know, and I say this because it for me, not necessarily in your business, but you don't want to be in a situation where you're not doing any listing. You got to be able to keep your eye on it and make sure that that you're pricing things right. even if you have very, very strict policies on how you price, you know, you want to be able to adapt to the market, and, you know, you could outsource this to some extent, but I don't like doing that, because I find that they have a tendency, outsourcing companies like Cellhound, for instance, as examples, they price things too low. And so, and I was able to get a lot more out of an item than they would, when they would price it. And, you know, Terapeak, sometimes you got to be very, very perfect on the wording. But sometimes, you know, if you have enough products in the market, you are the market. So, as a matter of fact, I could see many, many times in Terapeak that some of the pricing of the things that are starting to show up in Terapeak are stuff that I've come up with a price, because it's let's say 10 out of the 20 that they show on the page are mine. You know, and so everybody else is maybe selling things for $3-4, and I don't see how they're making any money. Unless they're doing massive volumes, and maybe they are, but I'm charging $15 to $20 on those same items. And by the way, the only reason why people buy from me versus them is, one is I, you know, list things that are in better shape, I think. And number two is I put a lot more information on the item than these other people are, but then they do show up in Terapeak because I'm searching for those. So in other words, if somebody searches the search terms that I'm putting in, not only mine shows up, some of theirs show up, but mine shows up when theirs don't show up. And so you got to make sure you're very tight on, in the employee handbook, on how you name things, how much of the 80 characters you use, making sure that all the fields are filled out. So these item specifics may seem to be a waste of time, and you know, and I think in certain areas they are, but it's very important to make sure those are in there, not only because because they are things that they do show up in search, especially in Google. All this needs to be in your employee handbook. And then you could, if you want to use a VA, a virtual assistant, you can, to do listing, for instance. They can't do shipping, but what happens is that they just need to follow the employee handbook, right, that you've set up. So it doesn't necessarily need to be somebody that's sitting right next to you. It could be somebody that you use for a virtual assistant or a service, what have you. And I learned this a lot when I was using the guys over at Hammock. Is that it was, in the very beginning, it was, you know, they didn't do things the same way I did, which is okay. I mean, if they had a good idea, we used it, right? But I would still be using them today if I think that they would be able to do the collectibles market. I just don't think that they're set up for that. For me anyway. But if I put together a well-crafted handbook, then it would be. And so I probably will end up using them again, because they do things really, really fast and they don't make a hell of a lot of mistakes, which is good. So enough about the employee handbook. I think you kind of get it. And I think actually when you have this thing in place, and if you ever get audited by your local government, you know, if you have a business office that does that kind of thing, I know we do here in Massachusetts, that having things like an employee handbook, not only showing how you do your work, but also, you know, any policies you may have as a company, just one, creates more professional atmosphere, but number two, I think it could keep you out of trouble in certain cases if somebody does something that may, you know, compromise your business from a legal standpoint. Now, I don't have any specifics around that because, you know, I'm just kind of pulling out of my hair. So I'm not really sure that it really completely makes sense for this type of business, depending on what you're selling, of course. But anyway, so that's it about the employee handbook. Some other things I'm starting to look at is, you know, I'm using two tools, Fruition and InkFrog. I'm using Fruition for using kind of templates to help me cross sell. And if you don't know what Fruition is, just do fruition.com. And I'm not an affiliate, but just go ahead and look at it and see if it works for you. But it essentially helps you cross sell with your product. And I thought that would be perfect, you know, not so much in the clothing, but certainly in the collectibles market. And I think I am seeing more multiple orders per customer. I haven't really been tracking it too much because I just implemented Fruition, but I'll start tracking it more vigilantly. And then InkFrog I use basically for reporting. Now, I'm eventually going to be using it for cross-listing to other platforms, because one of the things that it does that I really like is that when something sells in, let's say, Amazon, that it will delist it for automatically. You don't have to do anything with eBay and vice versa. And I will be selling postcards and other collectibles on Amazon, because they do allow you to do that. Merchant fulfilled, of course. because again, I want to make sure I improve my sell-through rate in order to meet my goals. I am doing this with a little bit of caution because Amazon is a little bit more of a different animal than what we have normally with eBay. But I'm going to give it a try. And if it ends up being good, then I'll stick with it with InkFrog. If it doesn't end up working out, then I won't. I'm just going to stick with the eBay hip postcard automatic link. So you don't really need an InkFrog for that. I am still on the fence about the whole Shopify thing. I am kind of experimenting with it right now. I haven't launched, but I am, you know, building it right now. And my experience has not been good when I did it before. Not necessarily with Shopify, but I was using Wix, but you know, similar situation. If I use Shopify and it ends up being good, then you have to use an InkFrog because the automatic link that they have between Shopify and eBay is, I just don't see how it works really, really well without having a real centralized management of this link. And InkFrog does do that. So, you know, words out on that. So if you want to act, if you've done this before and it works for you, then I think that, you know, please let me know and let me know what you did. Because, like I said, when I tried it before, it didn't work very well. So my existing website is really just essentially a mirror of my eBay site. So if it sells through Wix or it sells through eBay, I can't tell the difference because it's all through eBay. Right. And it's a little different than with Shopify. With Shopify, you know, well, with Shopify, it's different. It completely takes it off the eBay platform, which isn't a problem for me, other than collecting sales tax, which you do need to think about. But it gives you a lot more control of the look and feel than the plugin does for in the Wix site. So that's the reason why I'm doing it right now for ease of use with Wix. But when I move over to Shopify, or if I stay with Wix, I need to have a centralized platform that manages those. And I think InkFrog is probably the best one I've run into. Again, I'm not an affiliate, so you know, go to InkFrog.com and take a look. Okay. Anyway, so that's all I have for this week. I know it's kind of an abrupt ending, but you know, please go to the Old Fashioned Mike website, oldfashionedmike.com, and support our sponsors. And well, that's it. See you real soon. Bye.
This episode has ended, but your journey towards turning your reselling hobby into a business doesn't have to. Head on over to oldfashionedmike.com for more information and tips on running a successful reselling business. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Until next time.